Have you ever sat in silence, wanting to pray and say something to God, but find yourself at a loss for words? Well, you're not alone. For many of us, prayer can feel awkward. It can feel weird. We don't know what to say or how to say it. And then you tack on the real question of, is God even listening? Does he even care? Well, today on Whiskey in the Writings, we're going to explore the reality of what prayer should look like. And maybe it's not so much about the polished words and the perfect sentences, and more about just being real, authentic, and transparent with God. Thank you for joining me. Whiskey in the Writing is a place for the skeptic, the seeker, those who still believe, but maybe just not like they used to. A place where you can wrestle with your faith honestly and openly. My name is Joe Oliver. I have a master's degree in biblical theology and over 2 decades of working in churches as a pastor. And if you have questions, well, guess what? You're in the right place. Thanks for joining me. Let's get into it. Okay, so we're starting a new series. We're going to call this Practical Spirituality. It's going to be a 3-part series where we just look at the roots of what does it mean to be spiritual and how do we live out spirituality in our day-to-day lives. And of course, we've got to start with the topic of prayer and how we can have a spiritual part of our lives that is infused with prayer and a part of communicating with the divine and what that looks like. And so, like I said in the opener, for a lot of people, this can be awkward and weird. And I want to maybe take away some of those pretenses of what we think prayer is and actually look at a couple areas of the Bible that might encourage you in regards to picking up prayer again if you've dropped it entirely. And really just look at this idea and reality that prayer doesn't have to be this big show. It can really be the simple things. And I wonder if Jesus, the way he led, is to remind us of those simple ways that prayer can be a part of our lives. And so that's what we're going to be looking at today in part one of our Practical Spirituality. We're going to be looking at prayer. And today I'm drinking Angel's Envy. We're going to do our video a little bit different today than what we've been doing in the past. I like to try to mix things up and see how we can make things better. And so if this format that I'm doing for this series is you like it better than what we've done in the past, I'd love to hear about it in the show notes. But we're drinking Angel's Envy. It's a staple here on this channel. I love this whiskey and this bourbon. And so whatever you have in front of you, cheers. All right. Prayer for me has always been something that has been a part of my spiritual journey. I've became a Christian when I was 15, and due to the fact that it was through a very Pentecostal environment, spirituality was a big deal. Things like prayer were really emphasized. Things like connecting with God in real emotional, tangible ways were really maybe overemphasized in our church tradition that I grew up in or became a Christian in. And I realized that not everybody has those same upbringings, and that prayer can be something that is weird and difficult and discouraging at times, because we see the way that people pray. Have you ever been in a room where there's a circle and someone's asked to lead out in prayer, and it's like, man, that was so eloquent. Well, I could never do that. Or you listen to the pastor on a Sunday morning pray over people, and it's like, oh my gosh, that's something I could never do. And those expressions of prayer, although there's nothing wrong with any of those things, oftentimes, though, for someone who's just trying to live day to day in connection with the divine, that wants to connect with God through prayer, can sometimes make you feel inadequate. Because you're not using the same words, you don't sound as eloquent or as polished. And I want to make the case on this video that maybe that's not actually what Jesus is inviting us into when it comes to prayer, and take a pressure off your shoulder so that maybe you can jump back into what prayer looks like in your life. And so to do that, we're going to look at a couple areas in the Bible. Let's start with Jesus. Of course, like looking at Jesus and what he is about. Jesus is the lens by which we should see and measure all things in our lives, both spiritually, physically, relationally. Jesus is that lens. I wonder at times if people forget that, especially when I look at the world around us and I see so many people that proclaim to be followers of Jesus but look nothing like him in their practical expression of faith and life. And so it boggles my mind sometimes when I turn on the news. Wow, I just sound really old right now by saying turn on the news. Do people do that anymore? When I go to a website and I see an article about something that's happening in our world, and these people claim to be followers of Jesus, and yet their practices look nothing like him. It boggles my mind. And so for us here at Whiskey in the Writings, everything is filtered through the lens of Jesus and how we want to live, act, behave, treat other people, is all through the lens of Jesus. And so we always start with where's Jesus at on any type of topic that we might be exploring. Where's Jesus at? He's our starting point. And so when it comes to prayer, Jesus had a couple things that can be pulled from in regards to what maybe he thought prayer should look like. And let me just define for a second prayer. Prayer is simply a conversation with divine, the divine, God, Jesus, the Spirit. And it's not this big show. Prayer, it is just its essence, is just a conversation where you share and you listen. A conversation goes both ways, right? If you're the one that's always doing the talking, but you're not listening, are you really having a conversation? Probably not. And so there's a two-part thing here. And Jesus actually seems to have modeled both sides of the speaking and the listening. And so I want to point out first, and we're not going to read all of these instances, but if you spend time in the biographies of Jesus, one of the things that the biographers point out is that Jesus would go to a solitary place to pray. It's often said that he would go to the mountain to pray. He would go off by himself to pray. So Jesus seemed to, in his everyday kind of being and existing amongst the disciples, according to the biographers, was that he modeled a regular practice of intentional time with God. And so if we're to look at what Jesus modeled, the question maybe of us is, do you have a regular intentional time that you talk to God? Now, what that often gets put into in church language is like, you know, you have to, it's like this, you need to be praying every day, every morning when you get up or every night when you go to bed, which aren't bad things to do to get into that habit. But it becomes almost this legalistic rule, a rule of faith, maybe is it might be communicated that this is how it has to happen. And just because Jesus modeled it doesn't mean that we need to prescribe it in the sense of like it has to be a regiment thing, because we don't know that it was every Monday or every day or, you know, every night that he would go off and do this. We just know that he had a practice of regular, intentional communication with God. And so what I would want to encourage you with is, do you have a regular, intentional time that you spend with God? And that can look different depending on the season of life that you're in. There were seasons of my life where it was a 20-minute drive to work every day. So every day to work and coming back from work. And in And instead of just putting on the radio and listening to sports talk or listening to music or a podcast or an audiobook, which are my regular things I listen to, I would take that time and I would talk to God on my drive to work. That was my regular intentional time. And so you just got to get creative. It's not meant to be a burden for you. It's not meant to be a discouragement to you. And hopefully when we talk about how to pray in this episode that you can find some freedom in that intentional time. But one thing you should know is that Jesus did that. And so he modeled that intentional, purposeful time with God, where it was solitude himself. And I think a healthy practice in our life is if we can try to carve out those intentional times as well. But let's talk about the topic of prayer and what we say. And so what we have is that Jesus, in Matthew's gospel and in Luke's gospel, these two biographies, there is this teaching, this long form teaching that we have recorded called the Sermon on the Mount. You may have heard of it. In Matthew's biography, it covers three chapters. In Luke's biography, it's a little bit less. But in it, you get all of these different kind of moral type teachings that Jesus offers. And these kind of form the basis of what Jesus probably taught everywhere he went. There are some scholarship that seems to suggest that what we have recorded in Matthew were snippets of the sermons he would preach in different regions, wherever he would travel. Remember, Jesus would go from place to place and he'd be preaching the kingdom of God. That's what Mark tells us in his the opening of his biography. And so what was the kingdom of God? What would he have been preaching? Well, some scholarship seemed to suggest it was this Sermon on the Mount, maybe broken up into different pieces. Maybe he'd go into a town and he'd focus on the Beatitudes, or he'd focus on the adultery portion, or he'd focus on love for your enemies. Or maybe some scholarship maybe think that this whole thing, this whole section was parts of an entire sermon that he would do, because it seems to suggest that he went up on a mountainside or found a valley and would teach this. And so what we have recorded in Matthew and also in Luke seems to be parts of a fragmented sermon that he would preach everywhere, or one complete sermon that they heard so many times for 3 years that they spent with him listening to the sermon that they, you know, Matthew would have had the recall to be able to write down all of these words. All that being said, this is the teachings of Jesus, and he gets into a section where he talks about prayer. And this is found in the sixth chapter of Matthew's biography. And I just want to read it to you, and we're gonna maybe pick apart some elements here and then talk about a prayer that he taught us to pray, and maybe see what we can pull out of some tidbits of information there. So he says, whenever you pray, so he's inferring that you do pray or that you want to pray, do not be like the hypocrites, because they love to pray while standing in the synagogues. Those are the gatherings of Jewish communities would get together in places of that they called synagogue, where they would read the text together, eat meals together, fellowship together. So he said, because they love to pray while standing in the synagogue and on street corners so that people can see them. So we have a motivation here. So prayer, the motivation of prayer isn't for your public display of your own spirituality. So Jesus seems to suggest that there were people in his midst that were praying so that people could think highly of them. And he goes on to explain further. He says, truly I say to you, they have their reward. But whenever you pray, go into your inner room, close the door, pray to your Father in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. So he's referring back to this behavior that he seemed to model to them, that he would go to a solitary place, he'd spend time by himself, and he would pray. Prayer is not about others in this sense of like the personal prayer. There are prayers that we pray over people. That's different. That's not what we're talking about here. Jesus seems to be communicating the type of prayer where you are trying to connect with the divine, a personal kind of prayer. And if that personal prayer is being used, the motivation of that personal prayer so other people may see how spiritual you are, you got it backwards. Jesus says, no. When you want to pray, when you want to connect with God, find a solitary place, close the door, and just you let you and him be in conversation with each other. And then he goes on to say, so when you pray, so now you're in your private place, when you pray, okay, don't babble repeatedly like the Gentiles, because they think that by their many words they will be heard. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. So what an interesting point of view that Jesus has here. He says, when you pray, it's not about, he seems to suggest, it's not about the kinds of words that you're saying or the way that you're saying them or the many words that you've got to get out there. He seems to suggest that, like, that's not the point. God actually knows what you need, right? So then the question might be asked, then why pray, right? So prayer, there's something deeper going on with prayer than simply making my requests known to God. Because if God already knows the things that I'm requesting, then what would be the need to say them? And I think there's something deeper going on with prayer. And maybe I'll break it down in these two ways. One, prayer has an ability to make you aware of what's going on inside of your heart. When you have a way to communicate out, this is how I feel, this is what I'm thinking, we'll see some examples of that in the text that we look at next. But it has a way to bring awareness to what's going on inside of your heart, number one. And number two, when you go and you pray, not only is it exposing what's going on inside of you, but it also has an ability to realign you. Have you ever like thought something in your head, but then when you say it out loud, it actually, you're going, oh my gosh, I can't believe I thought that. Or maybe that's not the way actually I think. Because sometimes what we feel inside, just by getting it out and laying it out in front of God, it reveals sometimes the motivation of what's going on inside of us. And it reminds us of our dependency on the Creator God and his involvement in our lives. And so prayer isn't simply about making your requests known, although there's a part to be played in that, and we'll see that in a second. But it's also about exposing the motivation of our heart, what's going on inside of us, and laying them at the feet of the only one that can actually provide help and support. And so Jesus goes on to explain, so if it's not that, if it's not public facing, if it's something that's not about the words you say, then what is it about? And Jesus teaches us that. And this is the famous, if you've been in church in any part in your life, you know this prayer. Our Father in heaven, may your name be honored. May your kingdom come, may your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread and forgive us our debts as we also forgive our debtors. And do not lead us into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. So Jesus here gives us this model, this thing that becomes the way in which we ought to think about prayer. And there's a couple things happening here that I want to break down for you real quickly before we jump to the next text. Verse 9, where he says, so pray this way, and then he begins. So 9 and 10 form the opening stance. 11 and 13 form the second stance. So the first stance is about realigning yourself with the bigger picture in prayer. Sometimes we go to God and we get so focused on our little details that we forget that there's a bigger picture all around us. And so he says, our Father in heaven, may your name be honored. It's like, hey, God, I know you're in control and I trust you with that. It's about realigning our attention and our focus on God is actually the one in control. I know my problems seem really deep and really severe, but I got to remember that there is a God who is in control and we want to honor him for that. And then he says, may your kingdom come, may your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So this is about God, we want you to bring your rule and reign on earth. It's not about my rule and reign. Sometimes our prayers can be about what I want and what I'm getting out of it. But this Lord's Prayer here, what Jesus taught us to pray, he starts off by getting us to refocus on what's actually most important, the kingdom of God coming to rule through my life and through the life of his people. So it's a realignment. Then part two gets into the part that we all focus on, right? This idea of my personal needs. But I want to challenge something here. What Jesus does with this, there is an interesting distinction that we need to make. Nowhere in this portion is an I statement made. God, I need daily bread, so help me get it. God, I need to forgive people, and God, so help me forgive, you know, get my debts forgiven. There's no I statements. Do you notice? Did you pick up on that? It's all us. This prayer is about community. So it's give us, which is all of us, what we need to survive. Our daily bread is this, what we need to survive. God, help us. This is a community prayer. God, help us, forgive us our debts, the ways in which we do wrong against your kingdom. God, help, forgive all of us. Don't help us to overcome the temptation. Do you see that? So there's something powerful here that what Jesus does is he takes the attention off of me and the part one, to remind me that God is in control and that the point of it all is that his kingdom, his rule and reign comes here on earth. And I exist in a community of others. I am not alone. My prayers should be something that is about others as much as it is about myself. And so this is a powerful teaching here that what Jesus is doing here is giving us a template to remind us that when we go to pray, so when we sit here and we go, well, I don't know what I should pray about, pray the Lord's Prayer. Form it, fashion it in your context. That it can look, you know, different for every type of person. But use this as a template to think about when I pray, to start with remembering who God is and that the point in his kingdom is to come here, right? It's bigger than me. The picture is bigger than me. And then secondly, it's not simply about me. It's also about the community around me. So as I'm praying that God help me with my personal needs, do I have an ability to see the needs of others with and alongside my needs? How is this being formed and fashioned for others as well? Which is all about the ethic of Jesus. When you think of this, makes perfect sense when you think of the teachings that Jesus gave. Love your enemies, right? Do good to those who persecute you, like caring for those who are the outcast, those who are in need and wanting. Like Jesus, his whole ministry was centered around getting yourself out of a selfish mindset that this world is all about me and what I need and I want, and to realign myself with the way of God's kingdom, which is about caring for those around you. And if your Christianity is all about your personal needs and your comfort, is it really Christianity? Because Jesus seemed to model a different way, and he taught us to pray a different way. And so I want to challenge you with that, when you're praying, to align yourself with the prayers of Jesus. But it's not just Jesus. There's another thing that you can do that I often do in my own life when I'm praying is I turn to the Psalms. The Psalms are this epic poetry and songs that were written to communicate to God all of the joys, the celebrations, the loss, the sorrow, the lament, all of the experiences of life and the expressions of life can be found communicated through these Psalms. So oftentimes I'll open up what the mood I'm in, whether that's lament, sorrow, and despair, or that's rejoicing, gladness, and happiness. I turn to the Psalms, and I sometimes read these Psalms out loud to bring life and to bring words to the things that are longing in my own heart. And so a Psalm that I've gone to time and time again is Psalm 130. And I just want to read it to you because I think it echoes a lot of the sentiments that we find in our own lives. And there are going to be some words that we got to define, because this is language of an ancient culture at an ancient time that can be foreign to many of us, what's happening behind the scenes and the way that they communicate versus the way that we would communicate. So I'll stop from time to time to explain a little bit what's going on behind this psalm. But once Psalm 130, if you want to follow along with me, goes like this. From the deep water, I cry out to you, O Lord. O Lord, listen to me. pay attention to my plea for mercy. If you, O Lord, were to keep track of sins, O Lord, who could stand before you? But you are willing to forgive so that you might be honored. I rely on the Lord. I rely on him with my whole being. I wait for his assuring word. I yearn for the Lord more than watchmen do for the morning. Yes, more than watchmen do for the morning. O Israel, hope in the Lord, for the Lord exhibits loyal love and is more than willing to deliver. He will deliver Israel from all their sins. Why do I read this psalm over and over again? I have markups in my Bible here where I've circled things and wrote things. Let me just pull out a couple key things that I think are helpful. One, this person is that's writing this seems to be in a place of chaos and disruption in their life. Why do I know that? Well, at the opening stanza, it says, from the deep water, I cry out to you, O Lord. Well, deep water from a Jewish perspective represented chaos. It represented uncertainty. Deep waters is the same callback to Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was formless and void, and darkness covered the watery abyss. That deep water of chaos and disorder. So sometimes life can feel like it's in chaos and disorder, where we can't make sense, heads or tails, of anything that's going on around us. And if you feel that way, you are not alone. This writer, whoever it was of Psalm 130 here, understands that he says, from the deep water, not from the high mountaintop place. There are times that we are on a high mountaintop and everything's great. A lot of the times of life, it's a lot of deep water, isn't it? It's a lot of chaos. It's a lot of destruction. It's a lot of despair and frustration. And it's from those places that we turn to the Creator God. And so he says, from this chaos place, I cry out to you. And then he makes a plea, listen to me. Now, what's interesting for someone who is a follower of God, shouldn't it be presumed that he is listening? Why would you pray if you didn't think he was listening? Well, for an ancient person, they kind of weren't sure whether the gods were listening. And the only evidence and sign that the gods were listening were the things like, you know, rain would come, or they would have a harvest that was plentiful, or they would have health in their family. These were the evidences that the God listened to your prayer. That's common in the ancient world. But for Israel, it was more than that. It wasn't simply the outworking of what God did that caused them to believe that they were being listened to. They were called to trust God no matter what. And so even when there was no evidence on the earth that God was listening, that they were called into a trusting relationship with him. And so for this writer, you're seeing an expression of maybe doubt, maybe worry, maybe concern. And you go, but wait a minute, Joe, shouldn't they have had it perfect? No. And nowhere in the Bible does it suggest they did. They had doubts, just like you have doubts. Is God even listening? Is he even listening? And here we have, goes, my life is disorderly and I'm going to pray. I'm crying out to you, God. I hope you're listening. And so maybe that might comfort you a little bit to know you're not alone when you wonder, does God listen? He says, pay attention to my plea for mercy. And so then he goes into verse 4, but you are willing to forgive so that you might be honored. I rely on the Lord. I rely on him with my whole being. And so it's this sense of dependency that you get in this, and I resonate with that, that in times of chaos and disorder in my life, the only thing I can do is rely on God. And sometimes I just say, God, trust in you. Like, I don't know how this is going to work out. I'll do my best, but I rely on you. And he says this, and he communicates in verse 6. He says, I yearn for the Lord more than watchmen do for the morning. So what are watchmen? Watchmen are these people that would stand on the gates of a city, the walls of a city. They would look out, and they would look out all night until the morning would come, hoping that there weren't going to be raiders and bandits and other armies coming to attack them in the middle of the night. And so can you imagine being someone on the night watch, and you're walking the wall at night, and you're just going, man, I can't wait for that sun to start rising, because then, number one, I can rest. Number two, we got through another night without, you know, chaos. And so here we have someone in the middle of a disorder, and they're in it. They're currently in it, and they're like a watchman waiting anticipating, when is this going to end? When will I be able to rest? When will I get through this? And so when we pray, it's this, like, I love this because it's this honest expression of just where we're at. And you get that all throughout the Psalms. And so you open up the beginning parts of Psalms and you have songs of lament of God abandoning them, God turning their backs on them. There are all of these types of prayers. And what this shares with us and what this exposes for us when we read things like this is that it's okay to communicate transparently and vocally our emotions to God. It's okay. You can tell God how you're feeling. He can take it. Okay, he can take it. He wants you to express what's inside of you. Just like any parent, you know, if you have kids, you understand this. My kids are grown now, they're out of the house, I'm empty nesters. But there's something about when my child shares what's going on in their life. Like, I may not like be able to step in and fix it as a parent, but I want to hear what's going on inside of them. It connects me to them. And I think on some level, when we do this with God, he doesn't look at us and go, oh, you shouldn't say that. Hold your language, right? You know, potty mouth. No, I think God's going, I understand. I know this is frustrating. And he is in it with you. And so I want to encourage you to pray like Jesus, to pray the Psalms. When you don't know what to say, turn to those things to communicate with God. Now, lastly, I want to talk about silence. So we talked about prayer being two sides, what we say and what we hear. If you are not in the practice of praying, when you pray to sit and listen, I want to encourage you to do that. It's really hard for us to do in our current like media-centric world where we constantly have inputs coming into our minds to sit in silence. That's really hard. But this is what I want to challenge you with, okay? So this is what I'll leave you with. If you go to your own place, like Jesus said, find a time to pray. Take the time that you spent saying something to God and take that same amount of time, whether that was a 3-minute prayer, a 1-minute prayer, a 5-minute prayer, take the same equivalent of time and sit in silence. Listening to what's going on in your heart, listening to what's going on in your mind, and listening to what God may be saying to you in the midst of those things. So if I take 1 minute to make a prayer, take 1 minute in silence. If I take 5 minutes to pray over something, take 5 minutes of silence. Because it is in the silence that we quiet down all the noise that's happening from our lives and whatever we're going through. You just sit and you turn off the music, you turn off the radio, you sit in silence and you just let yourself breathe to hear. Because conversations are two-way, right? It's not simply prayer, it's not simply just what I'm saying to God, it's also what he's saying to me. And the only way you're gonna hear that is if you stop talking. So I encourage you to sit in silence the same amount of time that you used to pray, just as an opening practice to see what happens. That's all, to see what happens. So, well, I'll leave you with this, a practical way to start praying, because we're talking about practical spirituality, practical way to start praying again. Prayer, try to find time in your day to carve out to pray. Absolutely do that. But also prayer is an ongoing conversation. And so maybe it's your drive to work. Maybe it's when you're brushing your teeth. Maybe it's when you're in the shower. Maybe it's when you're cooking a meal. Maybe it's when you are, on a walk during your break at work. Take times throughout your day and just talk to God. Just talk to him. I often find myself when I pray, I'm just having an ongoing conversation with them. I'm saying, okay, God, hey, I'm about to go into this meeting and man, I really need your help to, make my mind ready for what I got to present. Or, Lord, man, I'm feeling really discouraged today. I miss talking to my kids. I haven't talked to my son in a couple weeks. I really miss them, Lord. I just want to, connect with them. And so Yeah, maybe I should call. Excuse me. Maybe I should call him. You know, I pray just in the, you know, as I'm mowing the lawn, you know, I'm making those paces and I'm talking to God. I'm talking to God about, you know, what my wife is going through and how I can be a better support to her. I talk to her about what my friends are going through. I talk to him about, you know, just everything. It's just an ongoing conversation. It doesn't have to be this big production. And so I want to encourage you to let go of the production-oriented prayer and learn to just simply talk to him like you would talk to a friend. And that might feel weird, it might feel awkward at first, but then over time, that discipline and practice becomes something that's normative in your life, and you find you're actually engaging with God all the time. So hopefully that was helpful to you. Practical spirituality, part one, prayer. I would encourage you to hopefully pick it back up again if you've let it go. If you're unsure, you know, and you're not sure if God's listening or if he's going to be present or even if there is a God, I want to encourage you to pick up this practice and start talking to him and watch and experience how God will draw near to you as you begin to share with him open and honestly through the Lord's Prayer, through like the Psalms, listening to him speak, quieting your mind and your heart so he can speak back to you, and watch how the Creator God of the universe will move closer to you through those experiences. So that being said, thank you for watching Whiskey in the Writings. Again, if this was helpful to you and there's someone in your life that you know is struggling with this conversation, please share the video with them. Also like, subscribe, all those things that come with it. That just helps us grow this channel. I really appreciate your time. Appreciate you listening. Hopefully this was helpful. And until next time on our part two of Practical Spirituality, we'll see you then. Cheers.